X-Talks connects professionals in the life science, medical device, and food industries with useful content like webinars, job openings, articles, and virtual meetings to help you succeed in your career. This Food Industry Focus podcast brings together some of our editorial staff to share insights into the latest B2B industry news to help keep you up to date. This week on the show, we are discussing Rethink Plastic Alliance, advocating for stricter regulations to minimize packaging waste, and Better Brands, new varieties of the revolutionary Better Bagel. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the X-Talks Food Podcast. I'm Sydney Perlmutter, Senior Food Industry Journalist and Webinar Moderator at xtalks.com, and this week I'm joined by Aisha Rashid, Vera Kovacevich, and Sarah Hand. Thanks for coming today. So I'm going to start us off with a story about plastic packaging. I feel like I've talked about this on the podcast before, but not for a while. So there is an alliance called the Rethink Plastic Alliance, and it is advocating for the integration of effective reuse systems into the European Union or EU's packaging and packaging waste regulation. And this is it's doing this in collaboration with a coalition of 81 other organizations. So this push aims to mitigate waste produced by single-use plastic takeaway packaging. In the EU, they call it takeaway. In Canada and potentially in the States, I know, you know, it's takeout. But I'll be referring to it as takeaway. Now, the collective is advocating for the transition towards reusable packaging in the food industry, asserting that it has significant environmental and financial benefits. So in an open letter to the members of the European Parliament from the Rethink Plastic Alliance and its associated partners, the coalition is seeking a more comprehensive reuse legislation in the EU. So this call for action is specifically directed towards members of the European Parliament and the Council, with the request to implement three key actions. And those would be support the European Commission's sectoral reuse targets, including those for the takeaway sector, conduct a critical assessment of the evidence comparing reuse and single-use packaging, challenging opaque methodologies, vested interests, and unrealistic assumptions, and establish economic incentives for reuse packaging systems, such as a dedicated fund from extended producer responsibility schemes. So according to Larissa Capello, the Reuse and Packaging Policy Officer at Zero Waste Europe, the current EU packaging legislation has not sufficiently addressed the problem of packaging waste. She argues that the recycling capabilities are inadequate to manage the volume of waste generated and asserts that the transition to reuse doesn't require more data or science, but rather concrete action. Now, the Rethink Plastic Alliance provides a fact sheet offering seven reasons why reusable takeaway packaging is a sustainable alternative to single-use options. And the sheet highlights that reusable packaging is more climate-friendly, citing that emissions from reusable items are distributed over the product's life cycle, depending on a number of, you know, how many times it's reused. And the Rethink Plastic Alliance also points out that reusable takeaway packaging is environmentally friendly in terms of water consumption. It requires less water to clean reusable packaging than to produce single-use packaging, according to the Reusable Packaging Association. And furthermore, reusable packaging can be recycled, whereas incineration is the most common disposal method for single-use packaging, which is not optimal for you know, the environment. But despite the rising bring-your-own packaging trend, sometimes at Starbucks, I know before COVID you were able to bring your own cup, and that's sort of what I'm referring to in terms of the bring-your-own packaging trend. The Rethink Plastic Alliance argues that this approach will not be enough to bring about a substantial shift towards a circular packaging sector, because that would depend on how many people are actually willing to do that. And the Alliance maintains that this concept targets a niche of highly motivated consumers and doesn't significantly balance the field between disposable and reusable packaging solutions, even with the incentive of a discount. The fact sheet produced by Rethink Plastic also brings attention to the issues of paper packaging. packaging. So despite its perceived recyclability, paper packaging can have a significant toll on forest resources and is not always recyclable due to contamination by food or coatings of plastic and aluminum. And lastly, the Rethink Plastic Alliance highlights that existing legislation and well-established reuse systems are already in place in several progressive EU member states. A number of countries, including France, Portugal, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, and Germany, have already integrated measures supporting or mandating reusable packaging. So, obviously, they would like to bring about more change in more places as well. So I was sort of comparing this, at least in my mind, to here in Ontario, or at least some places in Ontario, we've actually, I guess, banned or plastic bags, plastic grocery bags are not really available much anymore. Instead, they've been replaced at many retailers with those reusable sort of material. I'm not sure what material they're made out of, but the incentive there was to sort of cut down on those plastic bags. And me personally, I'm not actually sure if it was the more environmentally friendly option, just because I know that people use them as garbage or compost bags, and now those aren't available anymore. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this. Do you think that, you know, reusable plastic, like takeout packaging, will end up being the more sustainable option? Or do you think that, you know, the cleaning will take up more water, even though they say that it doesn't? It just seems like there are pros and cons to both. But I want to hear what you guys think about that.
I think that, like, instead of outright banning all, like, single use plastic, which I think is their ultimate goal, even though they don't want to say it maybe outright, I think their ultimate, like the Rethink Plastic Alliance, I do think their ultimate goal is to, like, prevent the use of many single-use plastics. But I think that the main issue is that plastic is mostly used for, like, food packaging, right? And, like, plastic water bottles and drinks and, you know, all that stuff. And I think the main issue is that if it's contaminated with food, it can't be recycled. And that's a big problem because most of it is contaminated with food. So I think the better solution may be to just look at ways to, like, effectively and, like, clean this plastic in a recycling facility. And I don't know if they need to, like, drench it in some solution that's also, like, environmentally friendly. I don't know. But I think a lot of research needs to be done on, like, how to clean these, like, contaminated plastics so they can be recycled in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think they don't make mention of this, but I do know that a lot of restaurants and I guess grocery stores offer, you know, takeout in styrofoam, which I don't think can be recycled. And in several, you know, depending on the where you are in the world and the city and the, you know, the town that you're in, all, recycling laws are different everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, here in Toronto, a lot of black plastic is not recyclable, and you just have to throw it out. And a lot of takeout comes in these black plastic packaging, and I'm not sure what the reasoning is. Maybe it's cheaper. Maybe, you know, it's just easier for the restaurant, but there are so many, like, specific laws in certain regions. So I think before anything is implemented, it should be, you know, more universal. But yeah, I agree, Vera. The cleaning could definitely be a big use of resources.
Yeah, you know, this brought up two questions for me. The first was, you know, what are they proposing that the reusable packaging would be made out of? And this wouldn't be an initiative to get people to return the reusable packaging to the food service outlet, right? It would be like,
no, it wouldn't. You're right.
It wouldn't be. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it would be, you're getting this reusable packaging and the hope is that you're taking it home, consuming your food, and then you're keeping those and using them as
yes.
food containers.
Yes.
So I think, for me, at least, I know the black packaging you're talking about, Sydney, like the black plastic that you'd normally have to throw out. And I know a lot of people already kind of keep that and then mm-hmm. use that as their food storage Tupperware. I used to do that, but I think the problem becomes, it really, they pile up.
It piles up. Yeah,
and,
I just mean.
Yeah, and I think there are concerns about putting that kind of stuff in the microwave too many times. I'm not saying that this is the type of packaging that they would be looking at specifically in the EU. But also, if you buy a set of Tupperware, like let's say you want to invest in glass, you have that set, you really don't have... an incentive or often the room to store more reusable packaging. So while I agree that 100% styrofoam is not the option, I'm not quite sure that this reusable packaging is the option either. And I was surprised actually to learn that the paper packaging was, you know, maybe not as good for the environment as we had originally thought. And I know that it's also an issue with some of those coatings that are put on, right?
The PFAS. Make it,
yeah, harder to recycle, or, you know, those can be leached into the food as well. So, you know, a really multifactorial problem here, but I can say from my perspective, at least, unless the take-home packaging, the reusable packaging was something that felt really high quality to me, like glass or something, which I'm sure it probably wouldn't be, I don't think I'd be very likely to keep it and reuse it.
Yeah, I completely agree, and that's where my thought with the reusable bags versus plastic bags was coming from. I'm already frustrated with the amount of reusable bags that I've gotten, and I can't really put them to use because I already have so many of them, and now I don't have bags for my compost. So, like, it's really like we gotta weigh the options here, and you know, I don't like plastic bags just as much as the next person in terms of how long they take to degrade. Like, we don't like that, but if we're not finding a use for the reusable ones, then what's the point?
And I think that's a really good comparison to make, Sydney, because the waste management systems do vary, you know, city by city across countries, and especially if you're talking about a huge region like the EU, you know, all of these member countries and things. And I know that at least in Canada, some grocery stores started offering those compostable, like the green, they're not plastic, but they can break down in a compost, those bags. And I thought that was a really good idea until our local municipality actually changed, I think, their waste management. And so now our organics waste or food waste needs to be either just like on its own or in like a paper bag. And so now you can't use those bags. So I guess it's still a good idea because if you're just throwing it away, at least it can be composted that way. At least it's being, you know, I don't know, composted at the landfill, I guess, or it's breaking down faster than the plastics. But I think the challenge here is like rolling this out on a massive scale, and particularly the scale that they're talking about across the EU. I just don't know.
And
yeah, I think it's perfectly feasible if people just bring their own cup and their own little glass container whenever they want to get takeout. That's not going to be too complicated to implement, and I think the effect on a large scale is going to be enormous. It's just like something you keep in your car or your bag, you know, it's just kind of something you take with you every day. I know it's an
you have a lot of faith in people because I don't have the same faith.
I did that for about 3 days at Tim Hortons, and then it just fell off. Bringing my own cup.
You know, that would be the ideal situation. Yeah. You know, I think we do that a lot more with like grocery bags. Like you know, you have them in your car, you have them on you just so you don't have to get one or, you know, at the store. But in terms of like takeout, the logistics behind that seem a little more complicated just because, like, do they have to wait for you to go and bring them your packaging? Or if you're getting food delivered, like, you know, what are they going to do? Can't, like, you're not going to send it to them and they're going to send it back to you. Like, in some cases it would work. Like, if you're just doing, like, if it was a drink, for example, like if you're just getting a Starbucks, you bring your own, you know, they do it then and there and then you're gone. But I can see it being an issue, like, just in terms of, like, the size of packaging. And I also don't think restaurants and retailers want to depend on the customers for, like, you know, they probably have a standard, like, size of packaging for various items that they want to use. Like, For example, I'll use those black packaging, the black packaging that we can't recycle here for storage, or if I'm like making food for someone, I'll just give it to them and I'm like, don't bring it back to me. Right. It's yours now. Like there are certain uses for them, but you're like at a certain point, they just start to pile up. And if they're just going to be implementing all reusable packaging, then everyone's going to be having the same problem and it's just going to keep piling up. So we have to weigh whether the single use is more detrimental than, you know, people having a bunch of reusable packaging that they're not using. Like it's two different ways sort of being, you know, environmentally conscious. And on the scale of like takeout and food packaging, which is a very big scale, like there's a lot of options to weigh and a lot of considerations. And I think we've touched on a lot of them here.
I think it's definitely a long-term thing as well. Look how long it's taken to get people accustomed to bringing their own bags to the grocery stores. Like what, 10 years maybe longer. And so I'm not saying that we can't get there. And I agree, like Vera and Aisha, that would be ideal if everyone could walk around and have their food container. But I often think about, you know, what if you're traveling, you're like in a new city. I know when I go to a grocery store in another city, like I haven't traveled on the airplane with my like reusable grocery bags. So I wouldn't have traveled with a reusable coffee mug or a reusable like Tupperware container or something. And so then that's when I need something else, right? I need an alternative because I'm just there. You know, I don't have my car, whatever the situation is. So there will, like the grocery bags that you can get now that are that fabric kind of thing that are reusable, but not, I don't know, not the super substantial reusable ones that you can also buy. There would always have to be an alternative for that person who's like, oh, I don't have my container. So I agree. I think the logistics of this are tricky. I think it's good if we can make like baby steps, I guess, towards this.
Yeah. You've all touched on all the points for sure and all great points. And like I think about that, like, okay, you know, you're going to be keeping these reusable containers, but does that really mitigate the problem? Because each time you go to this, you know, a restaurant, they're still going to be giving you those containers, right? Because like, there's no system that you're going to bring them back and they're going to fill your containers. Like that's not the idea. So I'm not really sure how this will curb the issue, but yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, you'd bring your own containers and things like that. But yeah, the logistics of that get complicated really fast. I think, you know, really, for me, when I think about sustainability, I really think about innovations and new technologies that really need to be developed. And I'm, you know, of course, people are working on this definitely to have better packaging solutions and materials that are biodegradable. And I think that's really where the efforts may need to kind of be. I know it's really hard, especially with containers where you need to retain heat, so the lining and all of that really all of that complicates things, which is unfortunate, but hopefully we'll get there, like you said, Sarah, baby steps. And like the other day I actually bought bags that were compostable, like they are degradable. So there are products out there slowly that I think we're seeing. So I think if we focus on the technologies, I think that in line with, you know, the other things that we can do on a daily basis to, you know, help cut down, not cut out per se, because that's going to be very difficult just on the get-go. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's an excellent point with, you know, new types of packaging being developed. Like I do come across new, types of packaging. I think like fiber-based packaging is becoming more of a thing these days. And I think like the ideal situation would be for a packaging to be produced in a manner that doesn't, you know, isn't too resource heavy. And then once the consumer receives that, then they're able to either actually make use of it or recycle or compost it, just so that, you know, it's a more circular economy and it actually gets used or goes back into sort of, you know, the system that produced it in the first place. So that would be ideal. And I think for now with the reusable, what they're trying to do here is that it'll be circumstantial. Like we can't expect consumers to know their next move always and know exactly what they're going to do and know what they need to bring to situations. I think when you can reuse things and when you can, you know, like use a reusable water bottle or take a cup to the coffee shop, like then you can do those things. But, you know, there are certain things that you can't do or predict. And you're right, Sarah. Yeah, just baby steps. All right, moving on to another story. Now, I've talked about this brand and this product before. So if you remember it, let me know. But it's there is a two new flavors of the Better Bagel. Now, this is produced by Better Brand, which is a leader in the refined carb space. Now, these two new flavors are the pretzel and the sesame. And it marks the continued expansion of the company's product line. And it'll join existing flavors, the classic, the everything, the cinnamon, and the chocolate chip. So I'll get to what the Better Bagel is in a sec, or I'll remind you if you do recall from the past that we've, I'll remind you if you don't remember when we've talked about it in the past. But in a quote from Patrick Schwarzenegger, who is a investor in the Better Brand, he said, "The Better Bagel is the holy grail of bagels and the only bagel I really eat. The sesame and the pretzel not only taste amazing, but are loaded with 26 grams of protein. It's the perfect breakfast or post-workout snack." Now, the Better Bagel has revolutionized the bread aisle with its innovative grain-changing technology, and this tech replaces ingredients found in traditional bagels and bread that contribute to high refined carb content with healthier alternatives. So, for instance, the Better Bagel's main ingredient is indigestible in the upper gastrointestinal tract and isn't absorbed into the body. So this contributes to gastrointestinal health by increasing short-term chain fatty acid production, which helps boost metabolism. And this technology also creates and utilizes enzymes that function as biological catalysts in the human body to enhance digestibility. And Better Brand's ingredients are also non-GMO, kosher, and plant-based. So the Better Bagel is not only a triumph of food tech, but also a testament to Better Brand's commitment to nutrition. So each bagel has the net carb equivalent of two slices of a banana, but with 250% more protein, 90% fewer carbs, and no added sugar compared to an average store-bought bagel. And I think the last we spoke about this was 2 years ago when the original flavors were introduced, and we sort of talked about, you know, whether traditional bagels are unhealthy. And I don't remember what conclusion we came to, but just in terms of the nutrition of this bagel, so much fewer carbs. I think it had fewer calories as well, and obviously way more protein and no added sugar as well. So you could call it healthier. Better Brand, though, was founded by Amy Yang, and she's actually the first American woman entrepreneur to raise more than $1 million in a venture-led pre-seed round in the food and beverage industry. And her journey began as a certified public accountant in Chicago and then as a litigation consultant at EY in New York. And she later earned her MBA from the Wharton School with a focus on strategic management and entrepreneurship and helped build a global talent hub in India. The inspiration for Better Brand came from Yang's personal struggle with maintaining a balanced diet and her ambition to drive large-scale impact by transforming the food industry. And the success of the Better Bagel thus far also reflects the growing market demand for low-carb and keto-friendly products. And this aim is to break free from the perceived limitations of healthy eating and create a space where consumers can enjoy their favorite foods without compromising their health goals. And Better Brand is at the forefront of a paradigm shift in the food industry, challenging the status quo and its transformative products. The introduction of the two new flavors of the Better Bagel showcases the company's commitment to innovation, health, and customer satisfaction. And amidst a rising trend of health-conscious eating and growing demand for low-carb products, Better Brand is certainly paving the way for a healthier, tastier future. Now, in the meantime, the new varieties of the Better Bagel can be purchased online and found at over 1,000 brick-and-mortar stores across the U.S., including Sprouts, the Fresh Market, and Whole Foods Market. And I believe they have Better Bagel has a contract with Whole Foods Market, and that was where it was debuted. So we've talked about, you know, a lot of, like, better-for-you products and some you know, I think they're a really, especially with bagels and things like carbs, which I didn't think you could really reinvent and take away most of the carb content, but evidently you can. I believe last time we spoke about this, we were talking about the price of the better bagel as well and how it was much more expensive. But Sarah, my question for you is, because I know that we talk about like better for you, and I know sometimes you'll say like sometimes it's just better to have the traditional every once in a while and treat yourself. So when it comes to these bagels, what do you think? Do you think that, people should just be able to enjoy a regular bagel, or do you think there's a good market for this?
I think that I like bagels now and again. I like a normal bagel. However, I think with this specific case, I was really impressed in the food technology that went into actually like developing this bagel. Mm-hmm. And what I was impressed in is the fact that they're not using a bunch of, I guess I would say like synthetic ingredients to kind of achieve their end goal here of reducing the carb content and things like that. They're actually using some really interesting science, I think, to me. And so I think I've mentioned before on the podcast that I actually did my master's degree on starch biosynthesis. And so I saw in their ingredients list, they listed modified food starches. And so I have a good idea of what they mean by that. And so I want to take a few moments to talk about starch. So please, if you're listening, don't turn off your podcast player. I swear this is going to be more interesting than I'm making it sound. So, so starch, food starch, comes in two forms. So it's essentially just a chain of sugar molecules. But there are two forms. So there's amylose and amylopectin. And so amylopectin is very heavily branched. And so what that means is there's multiple points at which the enzymes in your gut can break that down into sugar. Whereas amylose is a much longer chain and is more sparsely branched. And so it's more resistant to digestion and often shows up in the form of like dietary fiber. And so what I think that they've done here is created a starch to use in the bagel that's more resistant to digestion. So for context, the starch in bread flour is usually composed of a 75% amylopectin, so that heavily branched starch, and a 25% amylose mix. And so it's very readily broken down into sugar. That's why bagels have such a high glycemic index. What they've done is just created a starch that's higher in probably that amylose, making it more resistant to digestion and really upping the amount of dietary fiber. I don't know if you guys checked out the ingredients and the nutrition facts, but it's like one bagel has like 150% of your daily amount of fiber or something. So it's like you eat that bagel and like, oh, you're set for the day.
Regular.
In terms of fiber. Yeah. and so I think, yeah, with all that being said, it's not easy to formulate a food product, especially a baked good that's both high in fiber and protein. I didn't even touch on the like wheat protein side of things, that would have a taste and especially a texture that's similar enough to a traditional bagel for people to feel satisfied in that they're getting to eat a food that's traditionally been considered to not be the healthiest, and that they're getting all of these benefits. So that's my whole spiel about the starch, but I was really, I don't know, excited to see it. And I wonder what we had said about this before, because I agree the price is high for like what you're getting, but I you know what? I can see the market. And I would be interested to do like a taste test here, because sometimes mm-hmm. these things don't always live up to the hype, but I know they've got a lot of good reviews, so.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Sarah. Food science.
Yeah.
Love
from
it.
The best person who can explain it to us.
Exactly. So, I think this is pretty cool. And, especially again, with the food science, the tech that's gone into this, and, I think it is legit. And I also appreciate the fact, like how Sarah was saying, that there aren't, it's not loaded with synthetic ingredients and things like that. Yeah, it comes down to taste and price as well. But yeah, there is a market for this for sure. You know, people looking to be more health conscious, who may have health conditions as well. So I think definitely, do you know if there are any other products sort of similar to this in the market? Like, what's the market competition like? Or is there any?
That is a very good question. I'm sure there are, like, you know, you know, there's like lower carb bread and lower carb like wraps and things like that. So I would imagine that there are like lower carb bagels as well, because they're like we were saying, like there is a huge market for it. But I'm not sure if I feel like their technology is probably patented, and they mm-hmm. were maybe the first to do it with a bagel. So I'll get back to you on whether there's like very similar competitors. But yeah, it's a good question. And yeah, really, you're right, it just comes down to like to price and whether people are willing to spend a little more for a better for you alternative, and then taste as well. I'm a huge bagel fan. I am a Jewish girl, so I love bagels, and a traditional bagel really like means a lot to me. And if this tastes, you know, like a traditional bagel would, then I'm sold. I'm completely sold. I just wonder if you get that same, like, you know, that like rich, what's the word I'm looking for? Like doughiness, like that doughiness of a classic bagel, and how well they toast, and, you know, if you can treat them just like a normal bagel. Because if you could, then yes, I would absolutely be sold on this for sure. And I also am curious, you know, there's a brand behind this. It's the Better brand. And I wonder if in the future they'll come out with a bread or, you know, a wrap or other like carb heavy products that implement the same technology, but just with different products. Because it seems like they are capable of doing that. I guess they just wanted to start with a bagel first. And obviously it is successful and there is a market for it because they did unveil these two new flavors. So I think there was a demand for more flavors. And I completely see why the sesame was added, because a sesame bagel is so classic. I would argue way more classic than a cinnamon or chocolate chip. So clearly people want more varieties of this.
That's a really good point, though, about, you know, where would they go next if they were to expand outside of bagels? Yeah, what would be the next carb-heavy food that they would want to go after? Maybe it's a bread.
Pasta? Yeah, pasta. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking of with the bread, like, would you get the same, like, leavening, you know what I mean? Like, maybe because a bagel is already so dense, like, you still want to get that chewiness, but maybe because it's already so dense, they don't have to worry too much about how those modified starches are impacting how they're being, like, cooked. But with a bread, you know, I think some of the, like, lower carb breads are more dense in like a way that you don't want your bread to be, if that makes sense. So I could see that being more of a challenge, maybe, in a way. But I agree with you, Sydney. I also really like bagels. And I think that most, if not all, store-bought bagels, you know, they don't live up to like a good bagel. You know what I mean? Like, you never get the right texture on the outside as well. And so I wonder how these stack up in that way. I also notice, you know, if you order them through their e-commerce site, they come, I think they come frozen. And so if you want to keep them in your freezer, you can, or you just thaw them. That also made me like, maybe slightly concerned, because I was like, okay, how is that changing the texture with them having been frozen? But I can see that the person that you're going after, I think, with this type of product is more health concerned about their health than they are maybe about getting like the best bagel they've ever tasted. Like, I'm sure it's like quite a good bagel, but maybe it just has to beat like a store-bought bagel and not like a super good like deli bagel. That's my feeling on it.
Yeah, I agree. I think the people who want these aren't necessarily like
craving a bagel, like with cream cheese and lox in the works. You know, they're wanting breakfast, they're wanting a post-workout snack, like especially with the protein, the emphasis on the protein as well. Like they're wanting to get nutrients from this that they wouldn't get from traditional bagels. And who doesn't love a bagel? Like you can eat them any time of day. Like it's certainly like they're not reinventing the bagel, but they're sort of repurposing it for a different audience, I would say. All right, well, that's the end of this episode of the X Talks Food Podcast. If you like today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks, everyone, and see you next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the X Talks Food Industry Podcast. If you enjoyed our discussions today, please share the episode with your friends and colleagues, and be sure to subscribe in order to be notified when a new episode is released. To join in on the discussion, you can find X Talks on social media, email podcast@xtalks.com, or comment on the articles directly. Links are in the show description. Take a moment to join our community at xtalks.com to get access to everything we have to offer, including webinars, job listings, virtual meetings, articles, and more. The views and opinions expressed in the podcast are those of the speakers sharing them. They should not be taken as professional advice and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalks.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.